Shemos. Bnei Israel, etc., etc. Ve'ele Shemos. So on those words, if you think about it for a minute, think about it, there are eight letters in those two words, Ve'ele Shemos. If you take the first letter of those eight letters, the first, excuse me, the like a Rosh Tevo, like a Nutrikun, as they would say, if you take Vav, Aleph, Lamed, Hey, Shin Mem, Vav Tav, and you use that as an acronym, you get V'chayav. Catch this now. V'chayav. That's the Vav. Adam. Lahashlim. Haparsha. That's the Ela. And a person is obligated to complete the Parsha. Shnayim Mikra. Two times the text. V'echad Targum. And once the Targum, the Aramaic translation. Now you shouldn't think I'm that clever. That acronym, that Nutrikun, is found in the works of the Levush, who was a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, as well as the Kaf HaChaim, lived a little bit later, one of the great Sephardi poskim. So you have in a number of poskim, they suggest that the opening words of this week's Parsha are a remez, are a hint to the Ve'elah Shmos, are a hint to the mitzvah of Shnai Mikra. In case you're not impressed yet with that, the Baal HaTurim, who's none other than the Baal HaTurim, the son of the Rush, who was most famous as the Halachist, but also has a Perush al HaTorah called the Baal HaTurim. Anyone know what the Baal HaTurim's Perush on the Torah is famous for? Right, he's a math genius. And he had all sorts of wild gematrias. So this is not a gematria, but he takes it one step further. He finishes the whole pasuk. Because what are the two words that after Ve'ele Shmos? B'nei Yisrael. How about that? You want to go all the way? Coleman, what do you say? So listen to the Baal HaTurim. You ready to the Baal HaTurim? V'adam Asher Lomeid Haseder Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum. That's Ve'ele Shmos, if you're counting. Bekol Naim, with a nice and pleasant voice. Yichyeh Shanim Rabot Arukim Leolam. Shmos Ben Israel. How do you like that? So I'm not sure why, what Dain, you know, this pasuk, this opening phrase, to be the source of all these allusions. Huh? I'll give it to you afterwards, okay? So that's in the Baal HaTurim, the Levush, Hachayim, all sorts of poskim seeing that the opening of our Parsha, which has no inherent connection, as far as I can tell, any more than the rest of the Parshiot, but therefore I decided, in the tradition of these great poskim, to use Shemot as an opportunity to speak about this mitzvah, which I have a feeling, at least if you guys are like most people, is perhaps not sufficiently appreciated and not sufficiently observed. And that, gentlemen, is a shame. Because the Gemara in Masechta Brachos and Daf Chet tells us, Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Amar Rabbi Ami, Li'olam Yashlim Adam Parshiotav Ima Tzibur. A person should always be independently learning and corresponding to the Kriyas HaTorah that takes place in Shul. Shnayim Mikra Veka Targum. The Pasuk twice and the Targum. Shekol HaMashlim Parshiotav. Because anyone who does complete all the Parshios corresponding to the public reading, the reward is long life. That wasn't made up by the Baal HaTurim. He creatively connected the Tar Parsha, but the idea that there's some extra special oomph, special reward, special something about this mitzvah, which is rewarded in an extra special way, that's already in the source for the mitzvah in the Gemara. So it's not just a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah which you don't have, you know, there are only a few mitzvahs which the Torah itself promises long life. You have a slightly larger version of mitzvot, which the Chazal, which the Gemara promises long life, but it's not a huge list. And on that list of all things is the mitzvah of Shnai Mikra Ve'echa Targum, the idea of, on a week-by-week basis, learning the Parsha, doing all the Psukim twice, and some kind of Targum. So what I'd like to discuss with you is a number of practical issues. Does it really have to be Targum? Can it be Rashi? What about English translations? We have to do this on a week-by-week basis. What if I'm running late? Can I make up after the week, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later? How early can I start? How do I do it? One pasuk, then the Targum, a whole Parsha, then the back to... There's a number of practical issues. But before we get to those, what I'd really like to get to is a much more fundamental question, which is, what do Chazal have in mind? This is clearly not a mitzvah d'oraita, but what do Chazal have in mind? What is the purpose of this mitzvah. Why would Chazal all of a sudden come up with this idea? I mean, if you've heard about it, so maybe it doesn't surprise you, but I think if you've heard about it for the first time, it's a little bit of a peculiar kind of a mitzvah. What is the purpose of this? And you know, especially in light of the promised reward, so what exactly is going on, right? That's really, I'm not asking philosophically, I'm asking in a legal, lumdish way, what is the nature of this mitzvah? And I think we'll see a number of very interesting suggestions that are made, and a number of nafkamina that will flow from that, and that will naturally lead into some of the practical issues. So that, gentlemen, is the agenda for the next 50 minutes, 55 minutes or so. Yes?
Wasn't it when it used to read the Torah, they would do Shnei
Mikra? They do Shnei Mikra, or do they just read the Torah and then do Targum? This mitzvah in particular, this Gemara in particular,
yeah,
is Dafka before Kriyas HaTorah.
And not during Kriyas HaTorah.
Yes. Now, whether you can make up, as I said, let's say it's coming up to Simchas Torah, and you you have a ledger. I know I have friends who have a ledger. And I missed Vayera, and I missed Pakude. Can you make it up months later? That's a separate question. But in terms of the week by week, ideally, it's not only is it before, but they say listening to Kriyat Torah, Dafka is not one of them. That's why you may know there are some people, you see them during Kriyat Torah reading audibly the Parsha along with the reader. They're doing that because they want that to be one of their Shnai Mikras. But just listening to the reader, pretty universally not counted.
Well, then that was where the original thing came from.
I don't think so. I think this is separate. You'll see why in a minute when I give you some of the explanations for why. But I think that was a separate thing. They used to do, when you're right, they used to do a targum of the Kriyat Torah in shul. That's true. But I don't think it was for this mitzvah. This is something, it may be connected to, what its relationship to Kriyat Torah is exactly what we're going to get to in a moment. But whatever the relationship was, it isn't Kriyat Torah, it is something else. Okay, whether it's related to or not is the question. Okay, anyone want to suggest before I tell you what the Rishonim and the Achronim say? Anyone want to say, what do you think? What's the purpose of this mitzvah? Why would Chazal make up this peculiar kind of thing? Yes?
Isn't it so that everyone will be at least universally learning the same thing and they'll be able to what to talk
it's about? It's an Achdus thing?
Yeah.
Interesting, it's a possibility. My last year in Baltimore, I didn't know it was going to be my last year, but it turned out to be my last year living in Baltimore. So I initiated a project that started at the end of the summer and went through until basically Rosh Hashanah, where it started off with our shul, but then it mushroomed to about 20 shuls, thank God, where everyone was learning the same text of the not so much the laws, but mainly the philosophy and inspiration connected to davening. And there it had a dual focus. Number one is I wanted to help people improve their davening. But number two was it was an achdus thing. Because half the city was learning the same thing. And you'd be at the grocery store at a restaurant, checkout line, and you'd be like, oh, did you do today's tefillah thing? So it created a real achdus. So that such a phenomenon would create achdus is absolutely right. I'm not sure if that's the purpose of Shnai Mikra, but let's keep that in mind. That's one possibility. What else? Dave, yeah.
They were worried that people would focus too much on Torah Shabbat Peh.
I think you're giving an anachronistic reaction to the yeshiva movement. I'm not sure at the time of the Gemara, people were as universally focused on learning Gemara as they are in the modern yeshiva movement. But fair enough. Yeah, Coleman.
For people to be well-versed in Lash and be able to come up with insights from the Torah.
Excellent. Okay, so one possibility is general literacy. Let me reframe. But general Torah knowledge, general biblical literacy. You shouldn't be ignorant. Right? It's a little bit, Davey, a little bit like what you were saying, but not as reaction to a focus on Gemara, just in general. The basis of everything is Chumash. So people should know the Chumash. People should be literate. They should review it once a year. Makes sense. Okay, good. That's a nice possibility. Excellent. Can anyone think of something which is, I would say, in a certain sense, fundamentally different than anything that's been said so far? Maybe it's almost hiding in plain sight. Austin.
It shows control.
What way?
First of all, we talk about Kaveh Eitan, and we talk about just making something, just like in a way that Dafka only is special, because you're doing a Dafka day, and you see a goal, you work towards a goal every single day.
So this is why it's good for you.
Yeah, it's just control, right. And maybe if you live your life this way, it's not
okay.
Merit long.
Broader, good. So you're taking it even more removed, I think, than some of the previous suggestions. But you're on the same trajectory. I think all the suggestions we've had so far are, in a certain sense, similar, and that they're speaking about a broader goal. Let's try to be more focused for a minute. I'll try to help you I'll try to lead you to the finish line. Let's see if anyone gets what I'm aiming at. Right? Is it based on everything you guys are saying, it's somewhat, it could be almost coincidental that this is Im HaTzibur, that we're keeping up with the Tzibur, right? The idea that you should in general focus on Torah Shebechtav, not only Gemara, the idea that you should generally be literate, right? Why does that have to be the pace that the Gemara seems to set? Right? Let's focus on that for a second. Let's assume that that is a central ingredient, that the idea is it's Dafke Im HaTzibur, we're trying to keep up with. So now, what would that hint to you? If you focus on that, that's something different than I think everyone has said so far. Yes?
Perhaps so that if you get called up for something that you're able to...
Excellent, excellent. So some Rishonim, as we'll see in a moment, specifically say exactly that. As you know, the original minhag was that when you got an aliyah, it wasn't just ceremonial. You actually had to read the aliyah. So this way, if you practiced during the week, you'd be able to do it, wouldn't be embarrassed. Or more broadly, perhaps, even in today's day and age, where we don't read the Torah ourselves if we get it in Aliyah, but nevertheless, having gone through and studied and reviewed the Parsha in advance of the Kriyat HaTorah, what would you say that does to your Kriyat HaTorah experience? Clearly enhances it, right? When you're familiar with it, you've meditated over it, you've thought about it, even in a deep way, the Kriyat HaTorah then is reminding you of things that are much more familiar than... You know, as we all know, it can be hard to concentrate on Kriyat HaTorah. The more familiar you are with the text, the more recently you've seen it, the more engaged you will be. So I'll take your question in 1 second, Yoni. But what I want to just pull out from this before I tell you what the Rishonim and Achronim actually say is that I think if you put together all the different suggestions that we've made so far, you could reduce that to the following basic Chakira. Is Shnai Mikra Reka Targum some kind of independent Kiyum, pro Torah Shebechtav, pro general Torah literacy, what you said about maybe Allah Daf Yomi, regular learning, all these things are general nice goals. But the alternate way of looking at all of this is to say that it's not a general Kiyum, a general goal, but rather it is meant to, in some way, Dafka enhance Kriyas HaTorah. It's an adjunct of Kriyas HaTorah. It's part of that experience. Not a general Talmud Torah experience, but Dafka to help enhance, maybe even enable, if you were going to be the reader, Kriyat HaTorah. Those are two different ways, very different ways, I think, of looking at this mitzvah. Yes, Yoni?
Didn't you say this Takana of Shnai Mikra was before they instituted Kriyat HaTorah?
No.
Again,
it's as you may know, there was an evolution of how much they read. Triennial cycle, annual cycle, but no, as far as I know, it's pretty clear when the Gemara says Yashtim Adam Parshiyosef Im HaTzibur, it's presupposing that there is Kriyas HaTorah with Tzibur on a weekly basis. Okay, so if perhaps the go-to source on this topic is a tshuva of the Trumas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen lived in Germany, so Israeline, 400-500 years ago, about. We've talked about it before. What makes the book unique? It's a book of shut, shelot v'tshuvot. Every essay is a question and his answer. But what makes this one unique as opposed to all the others? He wrote the questions and the answers. It was a literary device. So always knew the answer because he set himself up pretty good. Okay? So he has a tshuva, Simin Chav Gimel, very famous tshuva, where he's medayek in the words of some of the earlier Rishonim. We don't have time to get into the diukim now. That's not our purpose for this kind of a shiur. But bottom line is, he basically fleshes out two possibilities. One is that, he says, is to help ensure that people are familiar with the topic that they would be reading on Kriyas HaTorah that Shabbos. That way they'll be more involved in the Kriyas HaTorah, they may be able to read if they're called on, etc. That's one possibility. The alternative, he suggests, this was Chazal's yearly plan. Right? And in a certain sense, not exactly what Austin said, but if it can kind of merge what Austin and Coleman said, kind of a combination. Just like, you know, there was a certain vision of, you know, every 7 years, you know, finish Torah Shebaal Peh, keep a connection. Everyone should have a basic literacy, a Daf Yomi vision. So it says the Trumas Hadeshen, basically, that was the idea of Shnai Mikra. There should be an annual learning plan broken up into the 50-plus subunits. It's manageable week by week. Builds momentum, builds habit. It's a way of basically letting people in a systematic, easy to manage schedule, go through the whole Torah every year. It's like a very good kind of a plan. It's almost as if, you know, one of you guys was sitting out with one of your rebbeim and you had a certain learning goal, but you weren't sure how to tackle it, and the Rebbe helped you kind of break it down manageable chunks, and this is how you'll do it. That's exactly what he suggests as the alternative. The Sefer HaChinuch, in the introduction, which he wrote to his son, we're not 100% sure who wrote the Chinuch. We know the basic time when it was written, Golden Age of Spain. People think it was the Ra'ah, but no one really knows for sure. One thing we know for sure is somebody wrote it to his son. That's clear from the introduction. So in that introduction, says the Sefer HaChinuch, he's going on about the mitzvah of learning Torah, and then he says, "V'al kein, kavu lanu chazal, likros chelek echad mi Sefer HaTorah b'makom kibbutz ha'am." Says, because Talmud Torah is so important, Chazal came up with the idea of Kriyas HaTorah, that every week we should read something in public. And then, also they obligated us, Likroso kol echad mi Yisrael bebeso kol shavua, that we should read it in our house each week, week by week. Kemosh koroso b'makom ha-kibbutz. Why? Kedei sheyaskil bidvarim yoter bekroto oto bebeto. When you read it at home, you can do yaskil yoter. Right? You can think about it more, right? You're at your own pace, you're not distracted, let alone if there are people talking in shul during Kriyas HaTorah. In Yiddish they would say a halbitzara. That's a whole other problem. Just how you're supposed to really think about what you're hearing and to really internalize it when you have a Bal Korei, you know, reading, even if he's not reading that fast, but he's not stopping because you have a question, right? So you can't, you don't really learn the Parsha because you hear Kriyas HaTorah. So says Sefer HaChinuch, that's the purpose of Shnei Mekar V'Echad Targum. You could do it in your house, or you could be Yaskil Yoter. You could think about things more. So it sounds to me like he's suggesting something more akin to the second approach in the Trumas HaDeshen. Right? This is a way of really, in a more deeper way. Chazal had two ideas in mind. Kriyas HaTorah performs a certain communal goal, but on an individual level, we want you to be really engaged in the Talmud Torah. So Shnei Mikra is a way, not the only way, but a way of really deeply engaging at your own pace at a time when you really can, when you can think of things. I'll give you the one Rishon, who's almost the opposite extreme. That is the Ra'avan. Ra'avan was one of the great, although somewhat lesser known, of the Ashkenazic Rishonim from Germany, the Ra'avan. And the Ra'avan is quoted in the Hagos Mamonios on the Rambam, who says a tremendous chiddush. He says, the mitzvah of Shnai Mikra only applies to certain people. In certain circumstances, it does not apply across the board. You know who it applies to? Only people who won't be in shul on Shabbos. That's what the Gemara had in mind. La'olam yashlim adam parishiosav imatzibur. Even if you won't be in shul, you shouldn't think that gets you off the hook from Parsha Shmos. Last week didn't get you off the hook from Parsha Vayechi. You should always do on your own what they're going to do in shul. Now, really, you should be in shul. Why aren't you in shul? Who knows? It could be 100 reasons. That's not the point. If you know you're not going to be in shul, so then you should do Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum. Says the Ravan, that's the mitzvah. If you're going to be in shul anyway, there's no mitzvah. Now, what do you think he thinks the mitzvah is? Right? You had to dig. You know, you don't have to dig that deep for this. You don't need to be a lamdan par excellence to figure this one out, right? Clearly, the Ravan holds. No.
Do it at least once a week.
No, clearly he holds it's a din in the Kriyas HaTorah. See, if you're going to be for the Kriyas HaTorah. Yes, I mean, you're always right, but this time you're actually right. In other words, if it was for the Kriyas HaTorah. That's what I meant to say, I'm sorry. If it was. I got too excited, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. If it was for the Kriyas HaTorah, so then you would say, Adarabba, Dafka, because you're going to shul, you need it. Clearly he holds that if you're going to get the basic literacy from shul, that's sufficient. If Dafka applies when you're not in shul, clearly there's some independent kiyum, not for the purpose of the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, but rather some parallel or even higher aim, which you can get. The Aruch HaShulchan says something great to the Sefer HaChinuch. He talks about there being two mitzvos, a mitzvah of Kriya and a mitzvah of Limud. Kriya being the more public one, which is a little bit less in depth. Limud you can learn on your own, more privately. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, I'm just giving you a source if you're ever curious. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has one of the great late 20th century actual commentaries really in a parshanut way on the Torah, was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky say for Emet Liakov. Okay, so in the introduction there, he also speaks about this as two dimensions. So just to pull back where we are, we're about to see some of the practical nafkaminas, which I think will help crystallize this. But again, in the Rishonim, in the later Rishonim, earlier Achronim, we see these two possibilities. Again, is it meant to enhance Kriyas HaTorah, or is it some kind of independent learning program to help you stay literate, stay fluent, stay up to date, so to speak, on your basic Torah knowledge? So how do we flesh this out? Where do we see this as really affecting the halacha? So first question, by when do you have to finish? Yeah, I'm going to do this on a weekly basis. Ideally, by when? Does it matter? So if you open up the Shulchan Aruch, Simon Reish Pei Hei, Seif Dalid, 285.4, says the Shulchan Aruch, ideally, you should finish by Shabbos lunch. That's what he says, by Shabbos lunch. Or at least by Mincha time. Yeah, and that's all right. Yeah, Aruch Adem, second meal. Okay, should ideally finish then, or at least by Mincha time later in the afternoon. That's second option if you didn't get it. And if he didn't do it by Shabbos afternoon, then at least by Mincha time, later in the afternoon. And then we go from lunch, Shabbos afternoon, Mincha. Then he says, okay, if you didn't do that, then until the following Wednesday, until Wednesday is still from the previous week. So a few more days. And then he goes from there to, and at least if not then, then by Shmini Atzeres. That's in the Shulchan Aruch. Reish Pei Hei Sif Dalet. Four options. Ideally by Shabbos morning, okay, if not then by Shabbos afternoon, if not then by Wednesday, and worse comes to worse, you catch up whatever you're missing by Shmini Atzeres, meaning he means Simchas Torah, obviously, at the end, right before we start the next parashah. So you should be done by Vezos HaBracha. That's the bottom. Those are the four options in order of preference in the Shulchan Aruch. Says the Magen Avram there, Sif Katan Vav, he says, there's really a fifth. He says, Ikar Chaser Min HaSefer. The ideal option is not even mentioned by the Shulchan Aruch. Everything in the Shulchan Aruch is secondary. Because what's really ideal, says the Magen Avram? Not that they're ideal you should finish by lunch. The real ideal, says the Magen Avraham, is you should finish before Shabbos, before Kriyas HaTorah. If you didn't do then, Shabbos lunch, Mincha, Wednesday, Shmini Atzeres. But says the Magen Avraham, the real ideal is to finish even before Shabbos, certainly before laning. The Mishnah Berurah, Sif Katan Tes, says, yeah, it's ideal really on Friday, or at least before Shabbos morning in the davening. Various other Rishonim, again, I don't need to give you an exhaustive list, but that's basically the various Shitos in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Mishnah Berurah, all based on various opinions in Rishonim for the most part. So if you think about it, it's pretty obvious that this is relevant, right? If you hold that the whole purpose of Shnai Mikra is to enable or engage you in Kriyas HaTorah, then it would seem obvious that at the very least, as a Lechachila, you have to finish Friday night, Shabbos morning, but something before Kriyas HaTorah. Any of the Shitot that allow you to finish later in the day, let alone months later, what's the goal of, Chol HaMoed Sukkos, reading six Parshios, which you missed in the winter? Clearly, it's not to enhance your Kriyas HaTorah at that point, right? Clearly, it's at that point just to get the material down. So, again, I'm not saying that there's no other way to look at this. You might see other benefits. But on some level, clearly this is the overriding issue. The more you see it as part of Kriyas HaTorah, clearly the more you're going to push it before the laning. The more you see it as a broader goal, even if you ideally want it then, but you're certainly going to have room for reading it even later. Yes, Coleman? It's a good question. So we're not going to have time to get into that now, but there are all sorts of things that come up during the year which are tricky, like three-day yomtivs and all sorts of things where it's tricky. I will try to get to in a second what happens if you're in Israel and then they read one parsha and then you go back to America or England or vice versa. That sometimes happens. That definitely happens to guys in yeshiva sometimes after Pesach, depending on Yom Tov Sheni, keep one day. That we're going to try to get to. Yes.
What's the din for women? Is it if it's like a positive test?
Right. So I think the general assumption is they're potter, but I think they're probably potter Meman or Shach. Because if it's a regular mitzvah of Talmud Torah, so women are potter from Talmud Torah, and women are also not obligated in Kriyas HaTorah. But it's a good question. It was, you know, that's often a good test case. That's a very, you're thinking in the right way. Excellent. I think in this case it won't help us, but often that would be. Okay, let me ask you the following. A lot of the variety type times of reading. What about not the weekly Kriya? What about the Kriya we have on Yom Tov? Now, on the one hand, we're reading from Emor, Pinchas, Re'eh, whatever we're reading from, Ashalach, whatever we're reading from. On the other hand, everything we read on a Yom Tov, we either already read as part of a weekly Parsha, or we will read as part of the weekly Parsha, by definition. Everything that's part of the Yom Tov readings is something that we're reading at least twice, and some of them are even read more than that. So is there a mitzvah of Shnai Mikra on Pesach, on Shavuos, on Sukkot, or not? So this is a discussion also in the Rishonim, also in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch paskins lakula. He says there's no obligation of, let me just make a few more points, then I'll get to you, okay? You can put your hand on, I see it. Let's say, says the Shulchan Aruch, Kriyas HaTorah, Parshas HaMoadim, Emor, Pinchas, Re, whatever, says the Shulchan Aruch, you're lenient. Again, the same week there might be a Parsha of the week. But if Pesach comes out on Tuesday, you don't have to quickly before Tuesday do Shnai Mikra on what we're reading in the morning on Pesach. That's the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. Where does he get it from? The Trumas HaDeshen. Same aforementioned tshuva of the Trumas HaDeshen. So there, he discusses the topic. He specifically says, you know why you don't need to? No. Anyone of you should be able to guess what's the next line? Why does the Trumas HaDeshen think you don't need to do Shnai Mikra before a Yom Tov? What's the logic?
Because it's not like a topic.
Already read it.
What if you didn't read it yet?
No, it's not.
So what's the goal? What's the purpose of Shnai Mikra?
Literate.
Exactly. Says the Trumas HaDeshen exactly. Exactly what Austin said. As some other of you, I can tell, we're trying to say the same thing. The whole purpose of the mitzvah, says the Trumas HaDeshen, is a year-long review of the Torah. An annual review of the Torah. So if either you got to it or you're going to get to it. But there's no need to do a separate fulfillment of Shnai Mikra Dafka before Yom Tov. And this works out to be the Shulchan Aruch L'Shitaso. The very fact that Shulchan Aruch allows you even until Shmini Atzeres, he said what? Shows that he sees this as part of a broader learning goal. The fact that he doesn't, right? That's a chumrah in a certain sense, or it's a kula maybe in that sense. It's also a kula here. You don't have to do it for the Yomim Tovim. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on this, where he also makes the same point. He points out that if you see it as more of an enhancement of the Kriyas HaTorah, so people should be engaged in the Kriya. Back in the day, they should be able to read the Torah. So then it wouldn't matter if it's Yom Tov or not. You'd be obligated just as much on Yom Tov. And that makes sense. And then Rav Moshe adds, what about the Arba Parshiot? Right? You have with leading up between Purim and Pesach, Parsha Zachor, Achodesh, these kind of things. Do you have to do Shnai Mikra for the special maftirs of the year? So says Rav Moshe, he thinks, of course, it's totally on the same thing. If you hold that the purpose is to be dafk engaged in the Kriyas HaTorah in a more integral, meaningful way, so yeah, on that week, not only do you have to prepare Shnai Mikra on the seven Aliyos of the Parsha, but then you have to find out what the maftir is of Parsha Zachor or Parsha Zachodesh, and do that as well. But if you hold, like the Shulchan Aruch seems to hold, that it's a general annual literacy review, so then it's not necessary, because you're anyway going to get it whenever that parsha comes up in the Torah. Another similar question: what about Haftorah? Right. So again, I'm not even discussing that people who go out during Haftorah, drink during Haftorah. Again, I'm sure you don't. You've never even heard of such things, I'm sure. Right. Exactly. But that's not even contemplated in the poskim. But do you have to not only listen and follow along the Haftorah, but do you have to even have prepared for Haftorah? Do you have to have done a Shnai Mikra, so to speak, on Haftorah or not? So this is quoted by the Ramah. They're in the same seminar, Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah discusses this. The Ramah's conclusion is, no, you do not. But he adds some people have the custom. I've never met anyone who had the custom. Well, it's not anyone who will admit to it. But the Ramah's people have the custom, but really he says he thinks Mikra Din, it's really not necessary. Well, what's the basis of the custom? So the Mishnah Berurah there says in Sifkat Yutas, why would anyone have a custom to do Shnai Mikra on the Haftarah? So says Mishnah Berurah, what do you think? In case you get called up to read the Haftarah. Exactly the same thing that some of the Rishonim said for what might be the whole basis of Shnai Mikra, we said. If the basis was, I think this is the Coleman's, what you said, right? That back in the day, you had to read the Torah yourself. So you never knew if you were going to get called up. Not every Gabbai is so ahead of the game that they can call you on Tuesday. You know, you're going to get Levi, you're going to get Shishi. Right? What if they just call you up? So there are people. My father happens to be one of these people. And he's not the only one, but I'm much more nervous. My father, you could ask, you know, you could call him up for Haftorah and he like knocks it off. Like that, without a mistake, just like perfectly. When I know, if I get just like, you know, Shabbos morning, you know, if it's like Chamishi or something, they come over to me, can we give you Maftir? I always say no. I don't want to do it without having thought about it or practiced it. That's me. My father can just knock it off. It doesn't bother him at all. When I was a rabbi in Baltimore, the minhag in our shul was that the rabbi always did 2 Haftorahs a year. In theory, I guess I could have done more, but minimally you did 2, Shabbos Shuvah and Shabbos Chazon. So I used to practice, even though I did them year after year, but during the week before I used to practice because I felt I needed that. It's not my natural talent. But other people, you know, so says the Mishnah Berurah, that was the minhag. Not just because I'm the rabbi or because the gabbai called me and so we'd like to give you maftir this week, or you have yahrzeit and you're making kiddush, so you know they're going to give you maftir. No, every week people would do it because you never know, you might get called up. So that parallels the approach of the idea of enhancing the experience in shul or preparing for the experience. Whereas if you held that the whole of Shnai Mikra or one of general literacy, so then you could have said, okay, we should be literate in Nach too. Just ask Shabbalita, he'll tell you. And yet, you see from the Shulchan Aruch, and this is really the way the Mishnah Berurah implies, is that, not that that's not a good thing, I don't think this is not a statement anti-learning Nach, for sure not, but it's also a statement that clearly it was not considered the same level of priority that Chazal would have created a mitzvah to dafka keep people familiar with it. 2 more, and then we'll wrap up the shiur with some of the practical issues. What about if a person, God forbid, is an avel? Let's say during their week of avelos. So, I hope none of you have any personal experience with that. But if you're familiar with it, even indirectly, you may be familiar with the fact, and if you have been personally affected, then you certainly know this, but during the Shiva, one of the prohibitions is Talmud Torah. We're not allowed to learn during Shiva. Which is similar to what annual prohibition of Talmud Torah that we all have every year? Tisha B'Av. Right, kids in Tisha B'Av? You're a funny man. Not. I think they say it reputedly in the name of the Beis HaLevi. People were always upset that he's such a machmir. You know, briskers are known to be machmirim. What are you talking about? I have a lot of leniencies. What are you talking about? See, I think he listed, I think it was like 5 famous heterim that he had. So one of them was, I hold it's mutter to learn on Christmas Eve. It's mutter to learn on Natal Nach. That was his heter. So that was one of them. Anyway, so I subscribe to such a heter. Just in case you're curious. So, if you're an Avel, you're not allowed to learn, just like that's the basis of the fact that you can't learn on Tisha B'Av. What's the basis of those respective Yisurim? Something which I hope you don't need me to remind you of, which is, of course, that Torah is the greatest pleasure. Right? To learn Torah is wonderful. It's amazing. Not always when we're in 9th grade or something, or when we have a test, but ideally, really, hopefully in Yeshiva, it's a pleasure. So, Sasanasya no chalem rasecha, p'kuri Yeshem sam chalev. Right? So, therefore, we're not supposed to be happy when we're avel. However, do avelim go to shul on Shabbos? They do. They listen to Kriyas HaTorah? They do. Because that kind of public, more ceremonial reading is not considered the same kind of a Talmud Torah. The question is, what about Shnai Mikra? Would an avel do Shnai Mikra? So, this is not a question that most people even think about. But there are some poskim that discuss it. And many poskim are lenient. I don't know if that's the right word, actually. I'm not sure what's more lenient, what's more makil, what's more machmir. I think many poskim, I'm not sure what the minog is, because to be honest with you, in all my years in the rabbinate, no one actually ever asked me that question. Shocking, I know. But I don't know what people did. They didn't ask me. But I'm not sure what I would have told them, because I wasn't really so familiar with this until recently. But there's such a discussion. It seems like many poskim hold that you can do Shnai Mikra, and others seem to prohibit it. So again, I didn't have a chance to look into this. I actually really only became familiar with this earlier today, this particular nuance. But again, it just struck me right away when I saw this discussion that L'cha'ora, it's connected. Right? The more you see it as general Talmud Torah, so that should be prohibited for the Ovel. Especially if you hold you can make it up till Shemini Atzeres, or for that matter, till Wednesday. If there's no urgency to do it, dafka while you're in Shiva, so why be Mekil? But if you hold that it's really part of the Kriyas HaTorah, just like the Ovel's allowed to hear Kriyas HaTorah, and certainly they should be allowed. Now, the question, I have a tzorach Ian, I'm just going to mention, I don't know if you're familiar with this, I'm not sure practice in your community, but where I'm from, typically, the Shabbos after Shiva, the person would get an aliyah, or even the day, the first Monday or Thursday, this idea of symbolizing their post-Shiva with an aliyah, because an Ovel wouldn't get an aliyah, and if he comes to Shul, he wouldn't get an aliyah, because we do see Kriyas HaTorah as a kind of a Talmud Torah thing. I'm not sure. That's a little bit of a monkey wrench into this. Tzarech Iyun at a later date. One last point for the international travelers. That's what I alluded to before. Rav Bezalel Stern, who I don't believe is alive anymore, but was a big rav in Melbourne. I've been told there are Australians every now and then in Gush. I'm just joking. I don't know you, but I'm certainly familiar with the wonderful Australians that we have in Yeshiva. So did you know, have you heard of the name Rav Stern from Melbourne? He was a Hasidic Shuri, he was a Holocaust survivor. He had been from Romania, Hungary, one of those places that's not Poland, more Eastern Europe. So he and his brother, there were two brothers, Bezalel and Rav Moshe Stern. Rav Moshe Stern had been the Rebbe of Debrecen in Hungary before the war. He then survived and was a big Rav in Brooklyn, and was known his whole life, even in Brooklyn, as the Debreciner Rav. So I don't know what city in Hungary or Romania his brother was, but after the war he got sent to Australia. There's a big, big Hasidic Shaposek in Melbourne, or Bezalel Stern. So he has a multi-volume svarim called the Bezalel HaChachma, right, in the shadow of Chachma. I stress that to you so you should never have the embarrassing mistake that I made, in which I once pronounced it the Bezalel HaChachma. So someone said, it's not the onion of knowledge. It's in the shadow. Okay. Among friends, I can admit that I once made that mistake in my younger years. So now I've saved you from that embarrassment. It's the Bezalel HaChachma. So in his tshuvas, he discusses the following shaila, which I'm not enough of a calendar expert to know if this is going to affect some of you guys this year, but when I was Shana Aleph, oh it is, Coleman's an expert, so Coleman knows. So I remember when I was Shana Aleph, this affected me, if you went back to Chutz Laretz, which I don't highly recommend, but if you went back to Chutz Laretz for, I didn't say I highly don't recommend it, there's a nuance in that formulation, by the way. I just said I don't highly recommend it. So if you go back for, let's say, Pesach, so what happens in a scenario if, let's say, a Yom Tov falls out on a Friday, right? Let's say Shavuos, for example, is an easier case than even the Pesach. Shavuos falls out on a Friday. So in Israel, that Shabbos is a Parshat HaShavua. And Chutz Laretz is still second day of Shavuos. So in Israel, there's going to be a Parsha ahead. So let's say you were in Chutz Laretz, and then you come back to Israel. So you're behind. Do you have to do that Parsha with the Tzibur? Or the other way around, let's say you were in Israel, you heard the Parsha, but then you went back to Australia, you went back to the United States or England. You've already done that Parsha. Do you have to do Shnai Mikra again on it? In both directions, he asked the question from Saul Stern. So again, it's all connected. If you see somehow enhancing your Kriyas HaTorah, so then wherever you are, wherever you're going to hear Kriyas HaTorah, you should probably do it. So if you've already heard that Parsha and you're not going to hear it again where you're going, you could be lenient. And if you're going to hear it a second time, he suggests, maybe you'd be Machmir. But if you hold it has to do with Talmud Torah, an annual learning cycle, then as long as you did it once, you're okay. So in the case where you were in Israel and heard it and then go back to the States or wherever, then you'd be Mekil. But if you were in the States and then coming back to Israel, you'd have to be Machmir because you have to get it done. Right? So that's an interesting case that comes up every now and then for people who travel. Okay, so that's, I think we just did 5-6 nafka mina of the question. Again, the central, fundamental question of the mitzvah is it really connected to Parshat HaShavua, Kriyas HaTorah, or is it some kind of more annual learning goal, measured step-by-step goal that Chazal had? And again, the more it is or isn't, will impact probably even more questions that we discussed. We discussed five or six, I think, very interesting questions. Okay, let's discuss now in the remaining 7-8 minutes that we have, or 5 minutes, let's try even, some practical issues which are just important halacha lemaisa for you to know. So number one, how do you learn it? What's the process? So here, if you look in the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berura, they offer two possibilities. Either pasuk by pasuk, each pasuk, say it twice with the Targum, then the next pasuk, pasuk Aleph, pasuk Bet. Others say you do parsha by parsha. I don't know parsha shmos. I mean, as you know, if you're a Baal Korah, if you look in the Chumash, right, the way the Torah is broken up, when there's a break in the line, that's what we call a parsha. Or like in your printed Chumashes, where you know you have like that pay or something, right, that's a parsha. That's a section. So some say the Mishnah Berurah and the Magen Avraham say you should do read an entire parsha in the Chumash, and then do it, you know, and then do it in the Targum, and section by section. Others say no, literally one pasuk by one pasuk. The Magen Avraham seems to prefer the pasuk by pasuk thing. There's a tshuva sefer called the Shevet Halevi. He just died last year, Pesach time, so for B'nai Brak. So too bad you didn't get to see him this year. But he quotes that the Chavetz Chaim himself had the practice, not just, you know, it's one thing with what he writes in Mishnah Berurah, but he attests that the personal practice of the Chavetz Chaim was to do pasuk, pasuk by pasuk. There was a great posek who was from Israel, was in America, and then came back to Israel and just passed away recently, Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt. Familiar with the name? You have to ask Asher Finkelstein. He grew up with him. He was from Memphis. He was a Talmud Mufakar, he was Israeli, came to America, became a Talmud Mufakar of Moshe Feinstein. And Moshe sent him to Memphis, where he became a big, big posek. He taught like grade school or even kindergarten for years because he didn't want to be like the parnes from the tzibur. So he was like a world famous posek. His farm was called Rivavot Ephraim. But he made a living like helping out like as a gabbai and like teaching little kids. Very fascinating person. Unfortunately, in his life, his wife died in a tragic way, and then he was also the victim of a very unscrupulous Madoff-esque scam, but it wasn't Madoff. If I'm not mistaken, he got ripped off by an Orthodox criminal. But unfortunately, like Mamash, he got like wiped out towards the end of his life, and he ended up just actually moving back to Israel, and he just died recently. But he was a very fascinating person. He corresponded with all the Gedolim of our generation. So he, in one of his tshuvas, the Rivos Ephraim, getting back to our topic, he tells you, what did the Chazon Ish do? He attests, he tells you, what's the personal practice? He says, I witnessed Rav Moshe Feinstein, and I witnessed, what does he tell you? So he says, what was the Chazon Ish's practice? He would go pasuk by pasuk, but instead of doing each pasuk twice, he would do pasuk, targum, pasuk. After he did it that way, he had that wrinkle. Because he felt, first you got to do the pasuk, so you know what's going on. But then you do the targum, so that when you do the pasuk the second time, again, this is based on an assumption that you know Aramaic, that's helpful, but that by doing the pasuk the second time after the targum, you understand it better because of the targum. It's kind of the Oreo sandwich. You got the targum with the white, the vanilla. It's in the middle. That's what he suggests. That's what he says the Chazon Ish personally preferred. He then says, what did I see Rav Moshe Feinstein do? This is amazing. I don't know if he did it his whole life, but at least what Rav Moshe Feinstein was. He first leaned each section twice. Then he went back and did Targum, and then he added Rashi and Ramban. In case you thought Rav Moshe just knew halacha, or just did his Torah Shavuot every day, right? That's what he says he saw Rav Moshe do. That's pretty time-consuming, I would say. Then again, maybe, huh? Then he did the Torah twice. Then he did the Targum. Then he did Rashi, and then he did Ramban. Pretty intense. I have a friend who years ago had a practice. I haven't kept up with him, so I don't know what he's doing now. But years ago, he used to do Rashi, which we're going to get to in a minute, how Rashi fits into this. But then he always used to do an extra Mefarish. So one year he did Ramban, one year he did Rabbeinu Bachaye, one year he did Kli Yakar. So you can become a real Talmid Chacham that way. It's not, again, if somebody's looking for a learning project, that's not a bad one. You know, every year to just change with a different Mefarish and just do it consistently for a year. Because not only will you see everything, but by doing him in that way, you'll notice inner issues with, you know, themes and consistencies in the Mefarish that you wouldn't if you just do topic by topic. You take the person or the Mefarish commentary as a unit. Also, let me just finish a little bit more and then I'll take any questions at the end, okay? So that's the question of Pasuk versus Targum, section versus Pasuk, etc. But what should you learn? So until now, we've just been throwing around the word Targum because that's in the Gemara. What's the idea of Targum? And could you substitute? Right, for all those of us who aren't loving the thought of the Aramaic. So this is actually, you shouldn't feel bad. This is not like some crisis in modern Orthodox education or some other thing that we like to talk about here. This goes back to the time of the Rishonim. If you already look in the tour, they suggest ditching Targum and substituting Rashi for Targum. What's the basis of that? What are the relative merits? So the suggestion is that Targum is a form of actual Torah Sheba'al Peh. Unkelus in particular, there's a Mesorah, the translation, the Targum of Unkelus, is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, that somehow that was already a tradition that goes back to Sinai. Again, it would be an amazing mystery how that then got revealed through a ger at a particular time in history that it did. But there is that tradition of that level of mystical exclusivity and importance of Targum, and some suggest that that's the basis. But others suggest that Rashi, there's also a tradition, again, how could you ever corroborate something like this? Either you believe it or you don't, but there are people who suggest that Rashi was written with Ruach HaKodesh. I don't know if it was or it wasn't, but you will hear people say such things. I've had Rebbeim say that to me over the years. But whether it was written with Ruach HaKodesh or not, certainly the premise of Rashi is to explain the Torah based on Torah Sheba'al Peh. It's almost the inverse of what Davy had said before. In other words, that the Mila that's seen by in Rashi, and he's not, unlike what I was taught when I was in elementary school, and maybe some of you were, that Rashi is the Pashtan par excellence or something, right? Could be further from the truth. Right? That's Ibn Ezra, that's Rashbam maybe, right? Every other Rashi is quoting Midrashim. That's the point, they say. The whole purpose of Rashi was to somehow synthesize the Torah Sheba'al Peh and the Torah Shebichsav. So when you do Shnai Mikra of a Rashi, you're not only getting Torah Shebichsav, but then you're getting the Mesorah through Rashi of the Torah Sheba'al Peh interpretation of the Torah Shebichsav. Bottom line is, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, yes, you can substitute Rashi for Targum. Some people, you could say kind of religiously, if you will, do Targum, even if they don't understand it. Some people I know do Targum, Dafka, because they figure, well, if I know what the Hebrew is, I can actually backwards learn Aramaic that way. It's not a bad svara. Not really getting so much out of the Aramaic as much as learning Aramaic from that. Okay. But most people that I know, certainly most people at your stage of life, and maybe in my stage of life too, I think most people who do Shnai Mikra, practically speaking, the ones who put up are usually more likely the ones who do Shnai Mikra with Rashi. With Rashi. And that is already endorsed in the Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Berurah discusses what I said before, what are the relative benefits of Targum versus Rashi. And he points out that it's not just an issue of translation. And this leads me to my last point. Some people have asked me, can you use the stone Chumash? Or I want to do Shnai Mikra and English. Or Shnai Mikra and the commentary on the bottom of the stone Chumash. So I asked one of my Rebbeim, Rav Mordechai Willig, this question. See, he thought that you can make a chilik between English Chumashim. It's not an endorsement, and there's no commercial benefit. He suggested you could be mechalik between the Art Scroll and the Arya Kaplan Chumash. Anyone know the Rabbi Arya Kaplan Chumash? At least what I'm familiar with, it's purple.
Yeah.
Right? It's not as popular. I think it's published by Moses 9. Right? They don't have the retail cred of Art Scroll. Anyway, fascinating Chumash. So the Art Scroll is a wonderful thing. I'm a big fan of the stone Chumash. But number one is just the translation is certainly insufficient. Clear from the Shulchan Aruch, even though we send it to Rashi, despite the way we often use them ourselves, is not meant to be a translation. And therefore, translations do not work. You need to know the translation because you need to know what you're reading, but that doesn't count. That's just everything, if you need it. But the Art Scroll, even the bottom, the commentary, is very good, and it does include Torah Sheba'al Peh and Torah Shebichsav, Parshanim, but it's not on every pasuk. Right, Targum is little on every pasuk, and Rashi is virtually, so that's discussed, but in the end, the Shulchan Aruch kind of paskins it's on enough, close enough. But the Art Scroll is certainly not even close. However, I'm not enough of a student of Rabbi Kaplan's Chumash but I'll take Rabbi Willig's word for it. He suggested that the Arya Kaplan does not have a commentary on the bottom. Every now and then there's small notes. But there's a translation. There's a right side of the page, left side of the page. But Rabbi Arya Kaplan's translation is not meant to be, it's not a literal translation. He is translating based on Torah Shabbat Peh. There are all sorts of examples, you can find that in Chumash, in which a word is not translated in the way you would usually expect literally, if there are circumstances in which, scenarios in which, there's a Torah Shabbat Peh tradition that understands it differently. He will translate it based on Torah Shabbat Peh. Not the same way. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. So, therefore, he suggested, again, I'm not enough of an expert, and I think there's no reason that anybody sitting in this room can't do Rashi. If Rashi itself is hard for you, there's now English translations that you can get with the Rashi, also by Art Scrolls. So you see, I'm not picking on them. That's the brown one, not the blue one. You can get in the big, you can get in the small. It's all available. It's a retail giant. Okay? So either way, this is an important mitzvah. Again, it really does have the double benefit. I see Rabbi Liebtex. We're going to stop in a second. Again, it'll help you literacy. It'll help you become a bigger Talmud Chacham. It'll help you be familiar with Torah. But it will also. It's not even a sale, shal safek. Not a batzal, but a sale. Not even a shadow of a doubt. It will absolutely transform your Kriyas HaTorah experience. You will be more engaged. It will be a more meaningful experience if you've already been thinking about it and familiar with the text throughout the week. The general literacy, it's good to do it on a week-by-week basis. Maybe you could chapa rein, as I would say in Yiddish, you could finish it up, you know, at the end of the year or whatever. But to do it on a week-by-week basis, it's a better system of learning. It will also help you with the Kriyas HaTorah. Yes?
Can you use Torah Shema?
He's quoting you when the Gemara talks about a certain pasuk.
Right,
I don't think it's comprehensive enough.
It's not, because it's pretty.
It's a good Shaila. You can ask Rav Gigi, maybe. I'm not sure. You have to ask the Posek. I'm not sure. I've never heard anyone say that. That's for sure. Okay. One more question, or then we're just gonna. Just let me. Well, two more questions. Two more questions. Actually, comes in. Yeah.
Do you have any?
It was Austin. It was his turn. Yeah. You wait again.
What's the scar behind saying
it's
partial versus
prosthetic? Like, why does he only get the one? Question. Take a look. I don't remember.
Good question. Fair question.
Yes.
What's your name?
Mr. Australia. Matthew.
Yeah.
From Melbourne?
I'm not going to say that sentence fast, yeah.
With regards to reading the
pasuk twice, is reading the Rashi in the second reading,
or
do you have to...
No, it's the pasuk twice and then Rashi or Targum, and the Chazish did the Targum in the middle or the Rashi in the middle. But you pasuk twice. Again, some people do it once with the Rashi, and then they'll read it out loud to themselves quietly while the Galkuri is reading. Not ideal, but certainly better than most people who don't do anything. Yes?
Do you have any other sources for using English versus Uncle's or Rashi? Because I've heard people say that you can't use English.
I would say the better question is to ask them where they got that from. No, stop that! Don't be a mature. I'm saying that's a tremendous chiddush. I never heard such a chiddush. I don't think there's any basis for it. So if you look, how do you extend? I don't believe that you can come in. How do you extend it past Targum? So the chiddush is Rashi. The Rashi is not a translation. How's the translation? How do you get from Rashi to translation?
Is also not considered a translation?
No, he's not. It's like he is taking the word to Targum, but he's doing it based on a Masorah from Sinai. Anyway, I didn't mean that in the way that some people reacted. In all